From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It's really a shame that we have to babysit the utilities in this way. Unfortunately, ComEd has shown us that they were willing to really make a mockery of the legislative process. The reality is that we are going to be cleaning up the mess created by the ComEd activities for some time to come.
That's the Democratic State Representative Ann Williams speaking with WBEZ. She's behind a package that attempts to place more restrictions on Commonwealth Edison after the utility admitted to a legislative bribery scheme last year. In fact, there are several ideas floating around for tightening controls on ComEd. But with only about a month left in the legislative session, will something actually occur? We'll discuss that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, Emeritus Professor and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also been a longtime Statehouse reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel. She's NPR Illinois Statehouse Editor. And joining us today, Dan Petrella. He covers state government for the Chicago Tribune. And Dan, it's always good to have you back with us.
Thanks, Sean. Good to be here.
Dan, let me go to you first. As was mentioned, it was last summer, Commonwealth Edison admitted to a scheme that was done to gain influence, including helping Speaker Michael Madigan's allies with jobs and contracts in return for favorable legislation. I should mention again that Madigan has not been charged. ComEd has paid a fine. So what does someone in the legislature want to see happen beyond that?
Well, there's sort of dueling interests going on in the legislature right now. Lawmakers are very eager to pass legislation that includes some sort of measure of accountability for ComEd to show that they are taking seriously what the company has admitted to in federal court. But at the same time, a month after that admission was made in federal court, parent company Exelon came out and said that they were going to close two nuclear power plants if they didn't get more support in the form of some kind of subsidy for those plants. So there is pressure on lawmakers also to come up with a way to prevent that from happening and save the union jobs at those nuclear plants.
Well, ComEd has probably done as much lobbying as any one entity in Springfield and certainly in recent years. And it's been well connected even before that time and before this scheme that has been uncovered. Does it still have clout? Does the company still have clout down here?
Well, it's interesting because they are taking a much more behind the scenes or not public approach to how they're doing things this year. You know, they've paused all campaign contributions to state elected officials and candidates. And they are not testifying at any of the hearings so far that are going on, at least the few that I've covered recently, are not signing on as proponents or opponents of any particular legislation. But what's happened in the last month or so is a coalition of labor unions has come out with a proposal that would be very beneficial to ComEd and Exelon. And if you hear some people who have tangled with the companies before, former Governor Pat Quinn was quoted in a story that I worked on with a colleague last week. You know, they say that that's just a page out of the ComEd and Exelon playbook, using the unions to help make their case. And the unions deny this. They say this is their proposal. It's aimed at clean energy and saving union jobs. But for some folks, that doesn't seem to pass the smell test.
Hannah, that's something ComEd does have going for us, is these jobs that it controls. And as was mentioned there, they've announced plans to close two northern Illinois nuclear plants, Byron and Dresden. And that prompted the governor's office to have a study done, I guess, trying to determine what would be needed to keep them open. Walk us back. What did that study say, and how was the what was the reaction to it?
Right. That was an independent study that I'm not sure the governor's office had clued many into that they were doing this. In fact, I think some legislators were quoted as saying, you know, it came as a surprise and they were frankly insulted that they had to find out about it from media reports instead of, you know, before getting briefed on it themselves. And so that study said that the subsidies that Exelon is looking for to keep those two plants open are, you know, the true need is not as big as they say. And that, of course, that upset the folks who are trying to push this union-backed bill, because that's the one that are, like Dan said, tied closest to Exelon and ComEd. And, you know, that puts a definite wrinkle in it. We also know that the governor's office is trying to push their own energy bill, but so far we haven't seen it because, from what I understand, they're not able yet to identify a sponsor. The governor's office has not been the most popular entity in the last year. Going it alone with COVID restrictions, that really damaged a lot of relationships that the governor had been trying to make and maintain through his, you know, fairly successful first year in office in 2019. And so, you know, there's already a lot of competing proposals. For the governor's office to put theirs in the mix would be very interesting. We'll see if that if they're successful at putting out their own proposal or getting a significant amount of what they want into you know, whatever negotiated omnibus bill that goes forward. But yeah, I thought that the way that the union-backed coalition put out their plan was fairly clever. They got a couple Republicans on board from those districts where those you know, endangered or so-called endangered plants are. You know, you've got the Union Power, which of course is very influential in Springfield, and you have you know, these Democrats who you know, very skilled at getting their legislation through Springfield, sponsoring it.
When it comes to the ethics portion of this, Dan, is there something out there that you've looked at that would actually, in your opinion, you know, be, I guess, a game changer when it comes to companies like ComEd?
Well, it's hard to say. One thing that's interesting is sort of the dueling proposal to the union one, and one that's been around a little longer actually is called the Clean Energy Jobs Act, and it contains some proposals, or the latest iteration does, that would go a little bit farther than what the union group has put into its plan. There would be independent monitors, not just for ComEd, but for all of the regulated utilities in the state. There's talk of including some form of restitution that the company would have to pay, you know, ensuring that anything the company has to pay as a result of the federal investigation comes from its profits and not from ratepayers. You know, so it's hard to say. I mean, I think you know, there's going to be something in a final bill, if one passes, that lawmakers and the governor will be able to point to and say, this is a way to hold the utility accountable for the behavior that it's admitted to in federal court.
Yeah, sure. I also thought it was interesting that after, Dan, you and your colleague published your story and WBEZ published a similar story over the weekend, that the union-backed energy coalition put out, you know, fairly quickly put out a press release, you know, saying, oh, we care about accountability too. We care about the ethics piece too.
Yeah, I never know how much credit to put into that happening as a response to news stories or things like that. But I did notice that as well. And I think it's interesting that, you know, they had some measures in there that they pointed to at the launch, but they kind of tried to strengthen that after there was some public pushback. You know, and it's not just former politicians like Pat Quinn that are pushing back on it, but there's, you know, consumer advocate groups like the Illinois Public Interest Research Group that have also raised questions about what's going on here, and others as well.
Charlie, when it comes to scandals, the legislature always seems to be a bit more reactive than proactive, but legislation usually follows after some of these actions come to light. I would have thought that might have been at the top of the agenda here for this session, and here we sit in the final weeks to go before the scheduled adjournment, and we're still waiting to figure out what's going on. Maybe we haven't even seen all of the packages yet. So your thoughts on that, on how long this has taken?
Yeah, I would be willing to bet any amount of money there will be something that can be touted as ethics reform embodied in whatever legislation ultimately gets passed to save those two nuclear plants, whether it'll be close to $300 million that Exelon wants, or whether it'll be closer to the $70 million a year that the study that Hannah mentioned suggested is justifiable, remains to be seen. But if you look at the history of ethics reform in Illinois, it's always been a reaction when lobbyist registration and disclosure requirements were tightened in 1993. That was because newspapers reported that lobbyists representing Chicago casino or Las Vegas casino interests told their bosses that they'd spent more than $5 million lobbying for a Chicago casino when they reported spending less than $24,000. And so we've tightened registration disclosure requirements. Later, we enacted a ban on donations on state property after there were stories about a lobbyist who called people off the House floor to give them campaign contributions. We did probably a dozen or more reforms responding point by point to all the stuff that Blagojevich had done. And so in my judgment, reform happens when the General Assembly makes the political calculation that doing nothing and keeping the status quo carries more risk for them at the polls than changing the way that they had been doing business just enough to mollify the electorate. And progress has always been incremental. So as I say, there will be some reforms to ComEd. Part of it might be, well, you can no longer make ratepayers pay for your political contributions. You're going to have to take that out of the shareholders. But I don't see anything really great or dramatic. And I would be very surprised if the legislation would go beyond the electric utilities. I'm assuming whatever they do for ComEd, they'd also do for Ameren, Illinois.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Dan Petrella with the Chicago Tribune. And before we leave this topic, Dan, just your thoughts on what Charlie had to say. Do you expect that we'll see something maybe limited in scope that will take place? Do you get that feeling from talking to people on different sides?
I think there is emphasis to try to get something done. And I think whenever there are, hundreds or close to a couple thousand jobs at risk, there's impetus to act. And I think that's sort of the company's point of making those kind of threats. Interesting too, that, lawmakers not only are grappling with utility ethics, but they've also got to respond to some of the misdeeds by their own former colleagues in the legislature, and are also working on an omnibus government ethics package as well. So it'd be kind of interesting to see how those two conversations move along on dual tracks.
Well, we also have something else that we'll be watching over the next several weeks, the efforts to put together a new state budget. And Hannah, last time out, we talked about how Democratic leaders and the governor had said they were setting aside plans for the money coming from the federal stimulus to pay back federal borrowing. They seem to be talking, I guess, a little bit more prudent about how to spend that money, but not everyone may have gotten that memo. I know there are people that think that some additional spending may be needed. Where do we stand about a month away from the scheduled adjournment when it comes to trying to get a budget together, and how does this stimulus money factor into that?
So the budget process is kind of at its beginning, which is not unusual for this time of year. But the $7.5 billion that the state has coming to it from the federal American Rescue Plan stimulus package passed in March, the rules are still being promulgated at the federal level, and we're supposed to see those in about a week or two. Of course, the longer that takes, the more peril that puts Illinois in when it comes to how the state is going to actually spend those federal dollars, because only certain things will be allowed under those rules. The governor and Speaker Chris Welch and Senate President Don Harmon co-wrote an op-ed in Crain's last week saying that $2.5 billion had to go toward paying back the short-term borrowing we did from the federal government. Illinois is the only state to need to take advantage of this Federal Reserve borrowing program because our budget's in such dire straits. the other part of their op-ed was, well, we need to use the rest of it for, you know, stimulating jobs, stimulating the economy. Sure, that could mean another round of grants for businesses who have been hit by COVID, but a lot of people are interpreting as, you know, we need long-term investments in programs. You know, while that's noble, folks are warning that we have to be cognizant of the fact that this is one-time money. But I've seen, you know, more than a couple of groups call for, you know, new spending programs. You know, for example, I watched a press conference this week about taking some of that stimulus money and putting it into a violence prevention program. That is, again, a noble goal. I think it'll be really interesting to watch how, you know, these new leaders, especially Speaker Welch, but also President Harmon, are able to thread the needle of being able to say no. But, you know, complicating this is a report from the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability that said, you know, splash cold water in our faces in case we didn't remember that we have been running a structural deficit for decades. It will probably just keep getting worse if we don't actually do anything to address it.
Yeah, Charlie, this type of money doesn't come into the state every day. This you could almost call it a windfall that's coming in, even though there's a lot of needs out there. We talked last week. You said you thought it was a good idea what the governor and the legislative leaders had mentioned in that op-ed. But your thoughts on what else could be done with that money?
Well, I think the main thing, as we discussed last week, is paying off what all we owe. And it's not just what we owe the federal government. The comptroller's office points out every day the comptroller's office does a backlog voucher report. And the one that came out this morning said that the general fund's payable backlog is roughly $4.1 billion. It's almost 25,000 vouchers that are backlogged. Well, in the normal course of events, we would probably be running $2.5 billion to $3 billion of bills needing to be paid because we obviously don't pay the bill the minute we get it. There's got to be a certain amount of tracking and verification done. But in addition to what we owe the federal government, we also owe more than $1 billion to a variety of different special funds from which we borrowed money from in the past to help make up shortfalls on a cash flow basis. We also owe roughly $400 million to the state treasurer's office investment pool from which we borrowed, also to help make up cash flow. All of these obligations carry with them interest. So I would argue that the first thing they should do, as the leaders and the governor suggested, and as Mendoza has been arguing and pushing for, we should pay off all the stuff that we owe, all of this borrowing, even though it doesn't come due until ultimately the last part is due in fiscal 2024, because we're paying interest on it. And so if we can pay off that, we save all the interest. I'd also suggest that it would make sense to try and use the money to pay off as much of our Medicaid bills as we can. I think the report that Hannah mentioned showed that Medicaid spending is one of the drivers of the fact that we've had these unbalanced budgets for so long. And the nice thing about paying off Medicaid bills is every dollar you spend for Medicaid, the federal government reimburses you. And historically, it's been at 50 cents on the dollar, but I'm pretty sure under the new federal relief programs, I think it's something like 67 cents on the dollar that we get back from the federal government. So in my mind, it would make sense to do that. But it would be inadvisable, I would argue, to use this to start up a whole bunch of new programs, because this is a one-time gift from the federal government, and there's no guarantee that it's going to continue.
Yeah, and Dan, there's also local governments who have some concerns out there when it comes to money that they say they're owed from the state. They don't want the state to take as well that local money that comes from Illinois' income taxes.
That's right. And that's a perennial issue in Springfield, is that when the state gets into some financial trouble, they like to call it prorates what they send to local governments in the income tax revenue that they are owed. So that's something you hear almost on an annual basis recently, is the municipalities coming to the Capitol and saying, hey, give us the money we're owed. We have budget problems too. One thing I wanted to note too on what Charlie was saying is, you know, one of the big debt problems that the state has is its unfunded pension liabilities. And that's, from my understanding, one of the few things that the state explicitly can't do with this this influx of federal money. It's getting one of the few strings that's attached is it can't be used for paying down pension debts. And, you know, $7.5 billion would go a very long way anyway toward paying down $141 billion pension liability.
The local governments are complaining because they say they're going to lose $152 million under the governor's proposal. But the governor's office points out that if the legislature enacts the loophole closings, as he's phrased it, changing some of the corporate deductions and exemptions, the municipalities would get $228 million more. And he also pointed out that local governments in Illinois are going to get $5.2 billion in the federal money under Biden's American Rescue Plan. And it's interesting because this local government distributed fund that basically originated, that was the price to pay to get Mayor Daley to back the income tax back in 69. When Oglesby first, Governor Oglesby proposed the income tax, it did not include anything for local governments. Richard J. Daley said, if you want me to put my guys on it, we want a slice. And so they agreed at the onset that it would be 10% of the revenue from the income tax would go back to municipalities.
Just a couple of moments left here. Hannah, I want to get an update on redistricting. The hearings that the Democrats were holding around the state, those have come to an end. But where do we stand at this point when it comes to getting new legislative districts drawn, and how is that going to happen?
Well, we have 5 weeks until May 31st. Democrats definitely want to get this, signed or passed and then onto the governor's desk by then. I don't think anyone's eager after the year we've had to stay here overtime in June. And of course, June 30th is that constitutional deadline where if they don't get it done by then, it's taken out of their hands. And Democrats absolutely don't want that because it would risk a 50-50 chance that Republicans would gain control of the maps. So the hearings, the dozens of hearings, some many virtual, some in person that were very sparsely attended have wound down. That gives Democrats cover, or at least in their minds, to say, well, we sought public input. Now it goes to, you know, folks who are experienced in drawing the maps and, you know, what Republicans would call backroom deals. And yeah, it's going to get very little public scrutiny, but Democrats, this is their chance because they really do not want it to get to a place where Republicans could have any sort of input, despite the good government types saying, you know, Republicans are right. We should let this go to an independent commission, even if it's not the commission that we envisioned.
No, just real quick, your hand of the governor. Is he really still a wild card in this as far as there's been talk? You know, will he sign off on a map that some people say is not fair, but you don't expect that there's going to be a problem with whatever the legislature, the Democrat-controlled legislature does, getting the Democratic governor to go along with it?
At this point, the more people I talk to, the more, convinced that it would be political suicide for him to veto the maps, even though, yes, he did say when he was running for governor that the power should be out of legislators' hands. But, you know, this is a opportunity that Democrats are not going to throw away.
Well, and I think also he's kind of modified that statement of late to say that he wants it to be a fair map, which he defines as maximizing the opportunities for people of color to elect representatives of their choice. And I'm assuming whatever maps the legislature produces for the General Assembly and for Congress will increase the number of districts that have a majority of people of color or that have a sufficient slice of people of color in the district. I suspect that he will sign it. and Republicans will be unhappy. As a matter of fact, wasn't it one Republican legislator who said his idea of a fair map is one that would elect more Republicans?
Always the eye of the beholder, I guess. So let's move on to our notes from the field. And Dan, let's start with you.
My note has to do with the vaccine distribution in the state, which has been full of ups and downs and bumps. And one thing I noticed looking at the data recently is that the 7-day average of daily vaccinations statewide actually peaked on April 12th, which is the day that outside the city of Chicago, vaccinations opened up to everyone 16 and older. That may be one indication that the big trouble now is no longer going to be the limited supply of shots, but rather convincing all the people who are hesitant to go ahead and get vaccinated. So it's going to be interesting to see how the state addresses that going forward.
Charlie?
Well, the Illinois House this week passed legislation that would implement term limits on leadership positions in the General Assembly. Under the legislation, no one could serve more than 10 consecutive years in a leadership position in the legislature, Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, minority leadership positions. And that would take effect following the next election. Now, it's obviously this is in reaction to Michael Madigan, who served 36 years as House Speaker. And the 2 years he wasn't Speaker, he was a minority leader. But the interesting thing is, going back to 1870, there are only three people that this would have impacted, would have cut short their time. Senate President Phil Rock, Senate President John Cullerton, and House Speaker Michael Madigan. No one else has served more than 10 years in a position of, well, I don't know about minority leaders because I couldn't find that information, but certainly not as House Speaker or Senate President.
All right, and Hannah.
Well, there's a lot of options this week, but I'm going to go with a story that Dan's colleagues reported out this morning. Earlier in April, the director of the State Board of Elections mysteriously went on administrative leave. He said that he had been the victim of an extortion attempt, and while an investigation was ongoing about whether it affected his work as executive director of the board, he was on leave. And then last week, the board said actually, he told the board that he was resigning. And the rumors had been flying. Turns out the story is that Sandvoss had met someone online, I guess, through the game Words with Friends, and had been sending messages, flirtatious messages. This person sent a picture, and he apparently sent one back, but then it got threatening, and this person said, if you don't send me $3,000, I will post a nude photo of you online, and, you know, with a narrative that would quote-unquote ruin him. And so that's the story.
Okay, that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and the Chicago Tribune's Dan Petrella. You can get a podcast of our show. It's at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. And join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.